This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we have arrived. We've made it.
It is Tuesday here on Sharp Money. I'm not Patrick Maher, but again, thank you for noticing. I am Jared Smith in for Patrick for the next 2 days. Dustin Sweetelson is back, and he is here with us. Dustin, how's your mentee be treating you here on this fine Tuesday?
Hey, it's good. You know why? Because it's officially football season
it
in
is.
My world. So maybe not in your world yet, because I have found a way to define when football season begins for one. And in our world as bettors, football season begins when the first future is officially placed.
Oh, we made that yesterday.
In the app. And last night, thanks to you, I found a better number on a bet I wanted. And Saquon Barkley right here at Circa. 30-1 offensive player of the year. So my mentality right now, it is football season from here on forward.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And it's where we start today. If you recall, when we opened the show yesterday, pivot, right? If you're a Friends fan, pivot. The pivot starts for me All-Star break. I have a chance to relax, and it allows my brain to start thinking about all the other beautiful things that are coming on the horizon on the sports calendar, and that, of course, is the NFL. It's not a coincidence that the Monday after the All-Star break is when a lot of these teams start to submit their forms of official designation. They show up for camp. They go through all the motions. They cross their T's. They dot their I's. Today, we got a new wave of, I'll call it, I don't want to say casualties, but holdouts. Let's call it holdouts because that's what it is. People showing up for camp and maybe some teams expecting other people to show up that perhaps didn't. And we direct our attention right out of the gate to my favorite team, the New York Jets, who had some, I guess it's interesting news. It shouldn't be surprising based on the contract situation, but Hassan Reddick was a no-show at camp today. I saw Aaron Rodgers show up. He was wearing flip-flops. He had a weird shirt on. It had some kind of like pelican thing on it. I don't know, something trippy. But he was there. He was present and accounted for reporting for duty. Hassan Reddick, not so much. And he is going to continue to miss camp until he has a new contract. Of course, the Jets were aware of this when they traded for him in the offseason. He's on the final year of a very lucrative deal. And they should have known that he was serious about holding out when over the summer he would have been paid $250K to arrive for mandatory minicamp. And he decided not to do that, of course, foregoing his workout bonus in the offseason. At that point, the Jets probably should have been like, okay, we might have a problem here. And nothing took place between that point and now. And here we are, late July. The season starts in 6 weeks, and the Jets' premier pass rusher that they traded for in the offseason is a no-show in camp. I'm not sure how you resolve this situation other than go Jerry Maguire. Show me the money. I don't know. Because he's willing to hold out, clearly.
Well, if money is the thing that you're going to end up paying Hassan Reddick here, let's say, I don't know, $16, $17 million, why would you have not, if you're the Jets, just held on to Bryce Huff? Because essentially what this was, there was an unconditional third coming back to New York when this deal went down, and they traded a younger Bryce Huff, who they created, who they know is a perfect fit and knows this system inside and out. You send him over to Philly. You bring back a veteran in Reddick, who's been super productive. I mean, double-digit sacks over the last 4 years on three different teams. But he's entering his age 30 season, whereas Bryce Huff, 26 years old, and you could have just paid the younger player and paid for the upside that's coming at $17 million a pop. Or now you're going to pay an older player who you will now potentially be under contract with for the decline when it starts. It's just a mismanaging of a situation if you are indeed going to end up locking up Reddick long term at a big price.
Not Joe Douglas's best work. Again, the Jets season is very much dependent on Aaron Rodgers. After that, it's very much dependent on can they get after the quarterback. Because look at that schedule. I mean, it's manageable the first 6 weeks. As we mentioned, that game against the Niners, we'll get to them in a minute. They're not immune from some of the cap drama and the training camp drama that we're talking about with the Jets here, although it's a little more positive news for them. But you get that game right out of the gate at San Francisco. And then you should be able to reel off a few wins and kind of calm things down. Then you play a stretch of games there where you're facing C.J. Stroud, Kyler Murray, Geno Smith, Tua. You're facing Trevor Lawrence. You're facing Matthew Stafford, Tua again, Josh Allen. I mean, you got to face Josh Allen, in the early part of the season as well. But you need to be able to rush the passer. They go into the bye week 12. They come out and they face, six of the better quarterbacks in the league. Top half of the league. Geno, you can make an argument, but the other five, I think there's no argument that they're top half. So it would be nice if Hassan Reddick was already under contract by then. It would be nice if this situation was handled in the offseason. It wasn't. It kind of feels like my laundry. I put it off, and I put it off until I have no underwear left, and then I have to do my laundry that day. The Jets knew this was the case. They traded for a guy who was a lame duck, and they treated it like he had years to live. And now it's going to be an interesting and will be a story. And dare I say, healthy distraction away from the usual Jet shenanigans, which is more self-inflicted, although this is self-inflicted too. But I'd rather them be talking about this than Aaron Rodgers. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, there's also an opening out there in Washington, D.C. that Aaron Rodgers is interested in, so that could pop up at any point as well. Look, also, I concur. You do laundry when there is no more underwear.
I try not to, but I'm usually procrastinating with my laundry.
And then if you don't, then you have to go inside out. And you can get 4 days out of a good pair. Inside out front, inside out backwards, backwards.
No,
you can get 4 days if you need to. You can.
4 days out of laundry? You clearly don't run as hot as I do.
No. Well, no, because my boxers become a thong here in Las Vegas.
All right, moving on. The Jets' opponent week one also had some news today coming from training camp, but it was more of the positive variety. We talked about this on last week's show while you were still siesting away on vacation, but I never thought the Brandon Ayuk news last week had much steam to it because it was a classic case of he said, he said. Both parties felt like there was really no move to be made. So they just kind of blabbed to the media to hope that, you know, public opinion would curry some favor. Brandon Ayuk's under contract. We've seen these rookie deals expire before and nothing take place. We've seen teams push it to the end and not give players the extension. That tends to be the case with the non-quarterbacks. And I just didn't see a scenario where Brandon and his camp, it was really his agent and his PR people, were going to get what they wanted here by just crying wolf and saying, we want more money, we want more money. The end of the story is the Niners called his bluff and Brandon showed up to camp today. This will likely be a storyline for all of training camp, but I don't think it is a market-moving, actionable type of thing. Brandon Ayuk knows his value is on the field. When he takes the Le'Veon Bell route, we'll see if Hassan Reddick takes that same route. It doesn't end well usually for the player because recency bias is a hell of a drug. You're forgotten. There are other players out there. And when you fall off the map, other teams are going to look elsewhere. The show must go on. It's show business. So I didn't think it was going to end well for Ayuk if he just sat on the sidelines and waited for this thing to play out. He had to show up. He can still lobby and ask for more money, but this, to me, is a non-story going forward unless he decides to take a U-turn and exit camp.
Sure, he can force his way out of there, but I think he'd get paid. But I don't know if the production is there in other places. I think when you look at the Niners and how they've allocated a lot of this salary cap, there's a lot of players on this roster making a lot of money. Trent Williams is their highest paid player this year at $31.5 million. Debo's gotten paid. Charvarius Ward's gotten paid. Nick Bosa has money coming in. Like Fred Warner, George, there's a lot of guys getting paid. And if Brandon Ayuk's priority is getting paid, all no judgment. Power to him. Go get yours, dude. I do think that there could be potentially an opportunity somewhere else for him. Because if I'm Kyle Shanahan, and let me get inside his mind for a minute, he's a kingmaker when it comes to quarterbacks and receivers. He can mold guys and get more out of them than most other coaches. It's been proven over time throughout his career. And I'd look at Brandon Ayuk and I'd say, you know what? He's a great route runner. He's a really strong, solid, across-the-board guy who can do a little bit of everything. But we just spent the first-round pick on Ricky Pearsall. We've got Debo.
Who's on? He's going to start the preseason on the pup list, by
sure.
the way.
We have Juwan Jennings, who's been here for years. We just G'd up Debo Samuel.
G'd up.
He has Ronnie Bell they took out of
Michigan.
You
ready for my hot take? But I think Debo gets traded before Ayuk does. If either of them get traded.
But here's my point is, for the Niners to look at the situation with Brandon Ayuk It's, do you want to add another guy in a salary cap league making even more money, or is this an opportunity to save because you have a coach in Kyle Shanahan who is so good at creating productive receivers and you spent a first-round pick on Pearsall? I think there's an opportunity here for San Francisco to say, you know what, Ayuk? If you don't want to be here, we will work with you and get you in the best situation that fits you best, because we can then save money on this position with so many other priorities being paid.
I don't disagree with your premise. That's the best-case scenario for both parties. It rarely ends best case scenario. Here's how I see this scenario playing out. The Niners will try to move both Ayuk and Debo, because either or, frankly. And they'll try. And they'll try to get the best return possible. And I think how the Niners season goes will be much dependent on who gets moved, if either. I don't see either of them getting moved. I don't.
Yeah, I don't think they can right now. Maybe next offseason there's an opportunity, obviously, with Ayuk and free agency coming up, where he can find a new home and get paid in the free market what, you know, a team is willing to spend on him. But right now, like you, if I was choosing between the two, despite the injury concerns, Debo is a fit for what Shanahan wants to do with his versatility. With
sure.
the way
I think they're, frankly, both are good fits. They're both really productive receivers.
Ayuk fits anywhere because he's a crisp route runner. But again, he doesn't have that top-end speed. He's not going to take these short passes 60, 70 yards downfield like a Tyreek, like a Waddle, like A.J. Brown. Like, he's not that type of player, but he's really, really good. Whereas Debo gives them this versatility with the offense, where all of a sudden San Francisco is the only team I've ever seen that has a wide receiver who could play running back and a running back who could play wide receiver.
George Kittle checked into camp today, too, like 30 pounds lighter. Lost a lot of weight because of the core muscle surgery. Put it back on, but for the most part is in good shape. So, you know, healthy receivers are a good thing for sure in San Francisco. They have a plethora of them, and I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. I think the Niners called Ayuk's bluff, and he's showing up in camp. Jake Aspin next, New York Radio. We're going to talk a little Jets.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The VSIN NFL betting guide out now. Our new college football guide drops on August 1st. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and the NFL. Our experts provide profiles of every team, advanced stats, trends, power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and a full VSIN Pro access subscription to our daily pro picks. You get all the video, all the data, including those betting splits through the Super Bowl for a price of just $175. The football special discount expires at the end of this month. Don't wait. VSIN.com/subscribe. Sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, it is Sharp Money back on a Tuesday. We'll be joined in a few moments by Jake Aspin, host of The Jake Aspin Show on YouTube. Also does great work for ESPN New York. They're in the Big Apple coming up at the bottom of this hour. Dan Paglio, Roto Baller betting editor. Say that five times fast. Follow him on the Twitter at ThunderDanDFS. That handle stood out to me, Dustin, because growing up as a Knicks fan in South Florida, Thunder Dan would always haunt my dream, being, of course, Dan Marley. That's where that name originated from. I have horrible memories of him just crushing my team with three pointers over the years.
I'm going to start. By the way, I have a Dan Marley Suns jersey. I'm going to start calling you Thunder Jared, because I think when you join the Thunder Down Under, I think that's going to be your name. Thunder Jared.
Am I going to join this stuff? Thunder Down Under? I will be honest. I did look at myself today coming out. I was very proud. I'm very proud of the work I've done. I'm similar to George Kittle, lost a lot of weight, although he had surgery to repair an injury, and I don't have any injuries.
And you're not taking PEDs, no Barry Bonds situation here.
Not taking anything, although
I think I just split my pants.
That's unfortunate. I have made big changes to my diet, and I honestly think so. We hear a lot of these stories about athletes, you know, magically losing 30 or 40 pounds in an off season, and they're just like, yeah, I just stopped eating fast food. And like, oh, that sounds easy. People ask me, what have I haven't bought any fancy diet plan. I haven't done any gym memberships. Literally, all I've done is stop eating and run. That's really it. Like, those are the only two things that I've done. I'm not saying that it's easy, because it takes a lot of discipline and work. But I can relate to how a diet, especially for me, it was intermittent fasting. It was cutting out a lot of carbs. I can relate to how some of these athletes feel. Like, I feel like a completely different person now. So much more energy. Like, I understand, especially remember the El Duque? Remember when he came over, we said in that documentary, and he's like, yeah, after I stopped eating fast food, I just became a better pitcher. It's like crazy that it's that easy, but sometimes it is.
Well, it's probably all he knew how to order at that point. You know what I mean? It was he just say number one.
He didn't even know what it was. Like, it coming from Cuba, it was like gold back then. But I mean, just crazy, crazy transformations across the board. All right, roster transformations with the Jets. We're going to talk to Jake in a few moments. Hopefully, we get him soon. But I was going to ask him his overall thoughts and just how the Jets roster is coming together. Because I'll be honest, outside of the Hassan Reddick news, this is a roster that's ready to win right now. And I feel like if they can get, I don't know what they were thinking. Hopefully Jake can provide some insight on what the Jets were thinking all summer, having this guy in camp and just not going to him. So let's talk to him right now on the Progressive Guest Line. Jake Aspin, host of the Jake Aspin Show on YouTube, of course, does great work for ESPN Radio in New York. So Jake, the Jets trade for Reddick in the offseason. They knew this contract situation was brewing. He missed the mandatory mini camp over the summer, which was a $250,000, I guess, fine or money that he left on the table. Either way, at that point, you have to know that he's serious. And now here we are, day one of training camp, and he's a no-show, and there's no solution in sight. So what's the next step for both parties here as the Jets kind of have a brewing problem on their hands?
It kind of feels like the next step is the Jets are willing to kind of call out his bluff a little bit. Like, okay, you're not going to show up? Well, guess what? We're going to find you every day, and we're not going to work out a new deal with you until you show up. At least that was a report from SNY earlier today. You know, this situation is so fascinating, guys, because how often can you remember a player being traded into a contract dispute, right? Typically, you see a player traded that had issues getting a deal done with the current team they were on, a la Brian Burns with the Panthers. He gets traded to the Giants before the deal is consummated. They have a new contract. So it's very rare that this happens. If you kind of read through the tea leaves, it sounds like Reddick told the Jets he was good to play on his current deal. The Jets then leaked out earlier today. They did give him a raise. They did make an offer to increase his $14.5 million salary this year, which is the final year of his contract he had signed previously with Philly. So now it comes down to, okay, what's the compromise here? If the Jets don't want to give him a multi-year extension, can they put more incentives in his deal, give him a pay raise? We just saw the Browns do it about an hour ago, not even with Amari Cooper. I think that's how this ultimately ends, but maybe it drags on for, you know, a couple more days, maybe a few more weeks, but I'm just not going to panic on July 23rd about Reddick just yet. He's going to be there at some point, and I'm sure he's going to be signed well before week one against the Niners on Monday night.
Well, Jake, they traded for Reddick. They traded a guy in Bryce Huff who they created. Now, maybe I should read the tea leaves here, and it's saying that the Jets maybe don't believe Bryce Huff as good as the production was a year ago, which is why they added a guy in Reddick who's a veteran who's been through it. Now he's 4 years older. But when I look at this from the outside as an unbiased party with the Jets, it's why not pay the guy you know already fits your system who is 4 years younger in Bryce Huff, then trade him over to Philly and bring in Reddick? Can you help me understand the mindset of this deal? If in the end you're going to have to pay Reddick, why wouldn't you have just paid Huff?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I think their thought process is this. They know Bryce Huff better than anyone, right? He was a UDFA. They didn't draft. Obviously, they signed. They developed. But when it comes to defensive linemen, the one thing you can't question with this Jets coaching staff is they are really good at player development on that side of the ball. John Franklin Myers, another guy, was a waiver claim. They turned him into a really good player. You look at Quinnen Williams, who was good. He became great first-team All-Pro under Robert Saleh and this staff. They drafted Jermaine Johnson. From year one to year two, he went from a rotational player to a Pro Bowler last year. They have Will McDonald, who they drafted in the first round last year. They think he's going to take a step. I think what it came down to was this. They look at Bryce Huff and they think he's a good player. They're in a win now, they're in win now mode, obviously, with this regime, this quarterback at 40 years old. I think Reddick, for at least 1 year, he's a better football player than Bryce Huff. He could close out games for them, and he fits this timeline of this 2 year window they have with Rodgers at quarterback. So I think it simply came down to Reddick makes us better. It only costs us a third round pick in 2026. We're not going to extend him long term. We're going to have him for at least this year. If it doesn't work out, we get a comp pick to replace the pick we gave up in the deal anyway. We had Hassan Reddick for free, and then we could pay Sauce, we could pay Garrett, we could pay Jermaine. They could start paying their younger players. I think that was the thought process. But at the end of the day, Bryce Huff's a really good player, so they better get it right with Reddick. They need him in camp. He's phenomenal, but they need him to play, and I think at the end of the day, they'll get something done.
Jake, I've been a Jets fan since I was 6 years old. Of course, in 98, I was 12 when they were in the AFC title game. It feels like this is as close as they've been to the Super Bowl since that point. Maybe, you know, those early 2000 years with Sanchez, but they never really – I didn't really felt like they were contenders those years. They just had a great defense. This feels like a complete team. Can they become more complete if they go out and get a guy like, I don't know, Devontae Adams? Because Mike Williams already starting the season on the PUP list is not very encouraging. And I'll be honest, I think that's the one weakness I see. If they're a little bit thin at the top of that wide receiver depth chart, anything for you on Devontae Adams maybe in a Jets uniform by the end of the season?
Look, sign me up for Devontae. I think every Jet fan would be crazy to not be on board with that. Look, the Mike Williams thing is interesting too, right? They say he's on the Breece Hall timeline. Well, Breece Hall didn't start practicing with the Jets coming off his ACL injury until about mid-August. So, you know, these first couple of weeks here of camp, you know, what does his receiver room look like? We know Garrett Wilson's a star, but after that, Alan Lazard, I mean, he was terrible last year. Maybe Rodgers being back could revitalize him a little bit. You have Xavier Gibson, who's going into his second year. He's more of a kind of a gadget slot guy. Malachi Corley was their draft pick they traded up for at the beginning of the third round. They're high on him. But, you know, if you're going to point to an area where the Jets maybe need that move to get them over the top, it would be a player like Devontae. But I think it's twofold. I think if the Jets could get him, I think they would make that move. They're all in to win this year. But where are the Raiders going to be, right? Why would the Raiders, who won 8 games last year, had a winning record with Antonio Pierce as their interim head coach, why would they essentially punt on their season now in July? So I think the Raiders, who I believe, guys, are underdogs in 8 of their first 10 games. If they're 3-6 at the trade deadline and the Jets are 6-3 and they feel like they're a Devontae away from being able to challenge anyone in the conference, Rodgers is healthy, he's playing well, I see the move being made then, but I don't really buy all the rumblings of anything happening between now and the start of the season.
30 seconds here, Jake. Who scares you more, the Bills or the Dolphins in division?
Well, to me, this is easy. I think it's the Bills, right? Josh Allen, best quarterback, quarterback-driven league. Buffalo's won the division 4 years in a row. Tua can't win a game when the temperature's below 45 degrees. He never has. I think it's Buffalo.
That's the voice of Jake Aspin, host of The Jake Aspin Show on YouTube. Of course, also does great work for ESPN Radio in the Big Apple. Jake, we appreciate the time, pal.
Guys, thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
Good stuff, bud. Of course, follow him on social media, at Jake Aspin. Obviously, I'm a fan. I'm biased. I try to take my fan hat off when we're covering these stories. It's really hard. It's really hard for me because this is as close as they've been. They're right there. If they can just keep Rodgers healthy and avoid shooting themselves in the foot, like,
you know what,
trading for defensive ends that aren't under contract.
It's admirable that you've somehow kept this hope despite them crushing your dreams for your entire life. What, I don't understand what gives you that hope.
It's been a long week, and it's only Tuesday, so I'm just trying to hold it together. More Menti B's on the other side. Dan Palio, Roto Baller betting editor. Stay with us.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, check it out, VSiN.com. It exists. It's awesome. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and, of course, the betting guides. NFL betting guide is out right now. Let's check on the site and see what's going on. Hit the refresh button. Adam Burke's got his best bets for Major League Baseball, and also Steve Mackinnon with his trends and power ratings. All kinds of goodies for you, including Michael Lombardi's analysis on which question, the biggest question, facing each NFC team. Again, tons of stuff for you at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, we are back here on Sharp Money. It's Tuesday. We're going to go from the NFL to more NFL. I mean, come on, guys. We'll get a little baseball in there as well. But it's Dan Palio, Roto Baller betting editor, joining us now via the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on Twitter at ThunderDan. DFS. All right, Dan, you have a lot on your card, so let's just dive right into it. It's Paul Skeens Day. I told you baseball. I'll give you some baseball here right out of the gate. We'll talk a little Nerfy, too, which I'm excited about. But you've got Paul Skeens on your card today, not only betting the side for Pittsburgh, but also the strikeout prop.
Yeah, I just love I love Skeens. He's fully rested here. He only threw one inning a week ago, right, in the All-Star game. He's, what, hit this 400 games in a row. I think the last time he was under eight was against Cincinnati about a month ago. I'm sure he's going to be jacked up. The Pirates in general And I know I'm wearing my Steelers hat here. I'm probably giving myself away a little bit. Pirates in general are playing really well right now, 8-2 in their last 10, and they're facing Lance Lynn on the other side, who we know can be very mercurial, right? So I think that I like Skeens for 8 strikeouts. He's going to probably let him go pretty deep into this game. And, you know, there's a lot of juice on the money line, so I think betting the run line at plus value, you know, I think you see like a 4-2, kind of maybe 5-2 Pirates win tonight.
All right, full disclosure, Dan did tell me he is a Pirates fan, so...
It's okay. He's wearing a Steelers hat. No, but I certainly understand.
We have to talk about the Paul Skeens situation. I know we got a million bets to get to, but I faded Paul Skeens in the AL Rookie of the Year market because I believed he was going to get shut down at some point.
We were wrong.
As a Pirates fan, seeing where they are with the wild card, if they stay in contention here, do you anticipate a full season of Paul Skeens, which would then, of course, lock up that NL Rookie of the Year?
I think so. I mean, I think they did the opposite. They slowly brought him out. He could have been opening day starter. Let's not kid ourselves, right? They let him sit down in AAA for 6 weeks, and then they brought him up and kind of been, I would say, handling him a little bit with kid gloves at first, but then he's been allowed to go 100 pitches. If they can continue to win and get Jerry Jones back, maybe, and people in Pittsburgh are clamoring for them to add a bat or two, and they're in the hunt, I don't see any way they can look their fans in the face and say, oh, we're going to shut Paul Skeens down in September when we're in a pennant, or we're in a wild card race, especially because he's packing the stadium. They had sold out crowds for the Phillies all weekend last weekend when they took 2 out of 3 from the Phils. So I don't see that happening. No.
So here's my vibe. And here's my assessment on Skeens. I was very much in Dustin's boat early because traditional conventional wisdom says they shut these guys down. And then as the situation kind of played out, and I started to really get into his backstory. He doesn't have your traditional, upbringing in terms of his arm usage. He was a transfer from a catcher, right, to a starting pitcher. So he doesn't have as many miles, and he didn't go through the minor leagues like a lot of the guys do. Like, he doesn't have as much tread on the tires. And I think at 66 1/3, I could see them pushing him to well over 100 innings this year, maybe 120, 130. And at that point, maybe about a month ago, is when I kind of changed my vibe on Skeens. So I'm with you. I think the strikeout prop's a great bet tonight. I'll be honest. I think he's got value in the Cy Young market if Sale and Wheeler don't run away with things. Although that number's gotten so short, probably tough to bet now. All right. Speaking of short numbers, you don't see that too often in the Nerfy department these days. I feel like tracking this every night, Dan, I notice it's obvious which ones stick out to me the night before. And the numbers are fair the night before. You got to look for them. Only a couple of markets have it offshore. A couple of books here have the overnight Nerfy markets. Then the next day, today, you start to see all these very popular Nerfy choices steam out. Not because they're sharp bets, because it's a very popular public market. And the one that stood out to me today last night, and it's one of the biggest steamers today, is this White Sox Rangers game, because Garrett Crochet is 19-1 in the Nerfy this year. Could be his last start in a White Sox uniform, but John Gray, it makes me nervous on the other side. So talk me through this White Sox Rangers Nerfy.
Yeah, John Gray's only 9-7 in the first inning, and he's the guy you worry about. But you mentioned off air, like, the White Sox scored last night and beat us. Are they going to do it again? They're so bad usually in the first inning, season long. I think you play it. Obviously, I bet it this morning at like -130 or -125, and now it's what, -150, -116 some places. So you have to bet these things early. They're going to run away like during the day, like you said, unless you're going to get against the grain with totally against, like, if you have some kind of certain stat you're following or some kind of methodology that where you're going against the guys who are good in the first. But that's totally true. You got to bet these either overnight or in the morning because they are running away during the day.
All right, you got another Nerfy, Dan. Phillies,
yes, sir.
Phillies Twinkies. Zach Wheeler's on the road, by the way, a bit deceptive. He has a really bad road ERA, but a lot of that comes from a bad start at Baltimore a couple starts back. Taking on Woods Richardson in Minnesota. You're going to go Nerfy in this one. Help me get inside your mind on it.
Yeah, and both offenses are pretty decent in the first, especially the Phillies. That's what got me a couple of days ago. You got to go through that order in the first inning, Trey Turner and Harper. But Woods Richardson's 15-1, right, in the first inning. Been really good. Zach Wheeler, 17-2. Both of these guys are really good first inning pitchers, but throw a lot of strikes. They don't walk, guys. When we look at walk rates and stuff, I mean, in the first inning, you're looking at whip and the base runners, right? We want guys that don't just give walks and allow a lot of base runners. both of these guys are really good in the first, and it's really decent value, right? I got it around 110, 120, minus 110, minus 120 this morning. It's not going to be heavily juiced like that other game.
All right, NFL win totals. Now we get to the main event here, Dan, because I'm getting hot and heavy with a bunch of these. I see one I really like, so I'll start here. Based off of where I'm at right now, I have one win total in. It's the Patriots under. I'm going to add more, and this might be my next one. Titans under 6.5 wins. I think the rest of this division, Dustin gave me, I don't know if that was a pensive look or an apprehensive look. I think this division is maybe a little bit better than we think. I think Jacksonville takes a step forward this year. I think Indy is going to be good as long as Richardson stays upright. We all know the Texans are great. Right. I think Tennessee is clearly the fourth team in this division. They have the worst. They might have the worst offensive line in football, which is not good news when you have a quarterback that likes to drop back in the pocket and throw it deep, and you've got a receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, who's like 100 years old and needs time to get open. So and you lost your best running back in Derrick Henry. I know they've got a lot coming in, but that guy's been a stud for years. A lot of moving parts in Tennessee, new coach, new everything basically on schemes on both sides. To me, under 6.5 makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, they were my favorite of the 6.5 group there. I think, you know, Will Levis has showed us a little bit of a flash, but we don't know if he's going to be the guy or be able to really carry this offense. We got new running backs. We got new receivers. We got, like you said, it's all new stuff. And then the schedule did not do them any favors. As you can see, they got Bengals in there. We got Dolphins, Packers. I mean, in fact, that whole division, they play the Packers, Bears, Lions. That's a really tough draw because that's a pretty good division over there. Maybe outside of Minnesota being a little shaky. And then, like you mentioned, their own division is really good. I mean, we can say pretty definitively that Will Levis is the fourth best quarterback division, right? I mean, by some margin. So, boy, I see 4 or 5 wins total, maybe. It's a tough out for them.
All right, let's stay in the South, where I am simpatico with you. I am very high on this team, Dan. I think their head coach proved in year one in Indianapolis, Shane Steichen, that he really knows what he's doing. And I think he has a perfect fit in Anthony Richardson as long as he stays healthy. I mean, they just won with Gardner Minshew, so what are you going to do with the Colts' win total this season?
Definitely. That's one of my favorite overs. You're looking at like 8.5, right? You're looking at those numbers that are trying not to bet the extremes. You know, it's tough to go under 4.5 or over 11.5, but over 8.5 for Indianapolis. We saw what Shane Steichen did with Jalen Hurts, right? I mean, Anthony Richardson is every bit as athletic and maybe more so as dynamic as a runner. And their defense is pretty solid, pretty decent. They're gonna battle. I think they're going to be in games. As long as Richardson stays healthy. Like you said, their division's tough, but they can split with some of those teams and win some of their outside division games. I see 9 to 10 wins for Annapolis. They're going to be knocking at the door with like a potential wild card.
Yeah, the Colts are very intriguing this year. All right, Dustin, you want to talk about the Giants here, bud?
No.
In fact, we can skip it and go to the Lions if you want.
Let's go to the Lions.
All right.
The Lions are a model franchise compared to the Giants right now.
It is ironic. I did catch some of Hard Knocks, which I want to get your thoughts on that at some point before we depart at the end of this week. But about 30 seconds left, Lions, I mean, they're the class of this division, right, Dan?
No doubt. Yeah, I have the Lions going over 10.5. I think they're getting better everywhere. Their defense should be improved this year. They went and signed all the guys back. They got their coordinator back. I mean, I don't see any reason to think they can't repeat what they did last year. They're just really sound on both sides of the football. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. Talent everywhere. I think they're even a dark horse for the NFC, right? They had the Niners, right? They had the Niners halftime. Let's face it.
They did. Jared Goff, MVP, baby. Let's go. Our MVP today, Dan Paglio. Great stuff. Roto Baller betting editor. Follow him on Twitter at ThunderDanDFS. Appreciate the time. More Sharp Money on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, check it out. Got a July ending with a bang. UFC 304, not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC. Download the app now. Use code VSIN. For new customers, you get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, we are back here on Sharp Money. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson. Patrick Maher will be back from vacation next week. When is he back from vacation?
Next Friday.
Next Friday. You'll have a slew of guest hosts, including myself, Ben Wilson, Joe Serrallo, also will be in the saddle over the next few days as we wish Patrick a very healthy and hearty vacation. All right, speaking of happy and hearty, that is how Amari Cooper is feeling today. We got word about 45 minutes ago from Schefter. Browns receiver Amari Cooper getting a $5 million raise while the team also guaranteeing the last $20 million left on his deal. Cooper will be entering the final year of his contract, 80 of the $100 million of that contract now guaranteed. So he gets a raise, he gets guaranteed money, and the Browns feel like they're ready to roll.
I love the Browns. Let me be clear. That division is a slog. It is just a brutal.
You love the quarterback, too?
Physical. Look, that's where it comes down to. And from a betting perspective, you're betting on the upside of Deshaun Watson. You get almost 6-1 on them to win the North. And to me, it feels like an opportunity, right? You don't know with Cincinnati. They've been rebuilding that offensive line for the Bengals through, like, the last three presidencies. Like, we're going back to, like,
to the Obama administration.
No, we're going like George W. Bush last time the Bengals had an offensive line, okay? So they can't protect Joe Burrow. And at some point, we have to acknowledge that he is an injury-prone player because he is not readily available. Now, when he is available, takes the team to the Super Bowl and loses to the Rams. For the Ravens.
I was there that game.
Oh, wow. And then the Ravens, right?
I was there.
Okay. The Ravens, we know what they are. I just think when it comes to this division, when this division is decided, which is late in the year, when the weather is gross and you have to play outdoors and it's about physicality and it's about defense, well, the Browns return the best defense in this group to me. The Browns will get Nick Chubb back. They will get Deshaun Watson back. If Deshaun Watson, right, is able to capture 75 to 80% of what he was with the Texans, which I think we forget with everything that's gone on off the field and on the field at this point, because it's been a minute.
If he can be
75 to 80% of that, this team to me is absolutely loaded on both sides of the ball. They can play physical football. They retain Jim Schwartz as their defensive coordinator. Kevin Stefanski is now a two-time winner of the Coach of the Year award. And I just think that number at 6-1 to win this division is disrespectful.
Yeah, I think the reason why it's 6-1 is twofold. You're in the division with the MVP and potentially the next best quarterback, not named Mahomes. Like, you could make the argument that two out of the top five quarterbacks in the league reside in this division with Burrow and Lamar. You could make that argument.
Sure.
And it might be the only division that you can make that argument for, because there's only five quarterbacks in the top five, right? I would say the AFC West has one of them. I think this division has two of them. And then you can make an argument for the other two. But the thing that worries me is that the quarterback on the team you're really high on, to me, is a bottom. I think he's a bottom 10 quarterback in the league right now, until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
But based on what we saw last year, the numbers we saw last year in a very brief time period, that did not look any. And he's had plenty of time to heal up. The mental, disadvantage you say he might be at after the time off, to me is not a fact. Like, you either can play the position or you can't. And after a few months, if you can't play it, it's obvious. And last year, it was obvious that he couldn't play it.
Well, but I do think he was battling the injuries all
through
camp.
That's fair.
And that's what I'm banking on here. And that's why the number's 6-1.
Because
bookmakers are more in your camp. They think Deshaun Watson is toast. I think what we saw last year from him was a guy who was never healthy, tried to fight through it, and just wasn't able to achieve what he used to be. And I think the days of him being that guy that he was in Houston are gone, but I do think he can be a lot of what that was. The guy who can make plays with his legs, a guy who can distribute to it. What is now a really versatile receiving core? I think they've done a really good job here.
The rest of the roster is fantastic. Well, it's a very similar situation like Minnesota.
Yeah, it's plug and play at quarterback. Now, he has a lot of guaranteed money due to him, so there's no moving him. But my thought is
plug and chug at quarterback, basically.
At 6-1, I like the risk.
That's fair.
That my belief is he was not healthy last year, and that's why he played so poorly.
So let's pull up the schedule, and the good news is I don't see any unwinnable games the first 5 weeks. Those aren't easy games. The first two are tough, but they could legitimate, like, nobody would be surprised if they started 4-1. And then you go to Philly in week six. I don't think that's a primetime game, but it should be. That's an awesome interconference game right there between two very physical football teams. That'll be a really fantastic football game. Let's say both of the Browns and the Eagles are 4-1 going into that game. I don't know if the Eagles have an early bye week. Who cares? You get the point. Like, then you go Eagles, Bengals, Ravens, Chargers. Then you get your bye. I like the bye placement. I think the bye placement is favorable for them because it's after what I would perceive to be their most difficult stretch of games. Although the end is pretty tough, too.
No, it is.
Chiefs, Bengals, Dolphins, Ravens, and then that game at Pittsburgh is going to be no cakewalk. And, oh, by the way, that's on the heels of a short week back-to-back. I mean, that is a brutal stretch. Steelers in prime time at home. Then you get a long break to travel to Denver. Then you go back home for, what, 3 days? Back on the road Friday to go play Pittsburgh Sunday. Then you're back home for the Chiefs, which is going to be the biggest game of the year if both teams are in playoff contention. Then you've got a short week back on the road at Cincinnati, Miami, at Baltimore to close. And that at Miami game is at home, but it's a primetime game. Then you go back on the road week 18. This schedule is freaking brutal. I'll be honest, and I like 6-1 lead. Should be 10-1.
Get off to a hot start. You have some
cushion. You have to get off to a 4-1 start.
Also, the Saints off the bye. I'm not buying the Saints being anything again.
Sure. But it really starts after that because of the travel, and the travel situational alignment does not favor them down the stretch.
And one would think having the Steelers in week 12 and week 14 could be easy prep. However, it feels like a very Mike Tomlin move, where I'll come to your side of this argument, where we will see Russell Wilson in week 12 and we will see Justin Fields in week 14. So all the prep that you had the first time goes out the window.
So, looking at this schedule, I can see why, after winning 11 games last year and having the exact same roster, this team...
It's not, no, hold on. It's not the exact same roster.
It's a very similar roster.
No, hold on. Jerome Ford was the starting running back.
They're better at running back. That's worth the worst amount of wins above replacement of any
Flacco
position on the field.
Comeback player of the year. They're better at quarterback with Deshaun Watson.
That's what I'm saying. Hold on. Bear with me. Hold on. That's what I'm saying. The roster is better. Chubb is healthy. Flacco's gone on the couch eating bonbons next to me.
What is a bonbon?
I don't know. It's like chocolate with ice cream in it.
They're
delicious.
I've never seen bonbons, and I've never seen porridge in my life.
Wait, you've never eaten oatmeal before?
Porridge and oatmeal are not the same.
Anyways, the roster is better. The quarterback situation is better. They won 11 games last year. Their win total is 8.5.
Say roster again.
Roster?
I say roster. You say roster like it's R-A-W.
I got a little New York in me still.
I don't know if that's New York. I feel
Rasta.
Like I don't know where that's from. I don't know where you lived.
So I've lived everywhere. Where haven't I lived? You name the state, I've lived there. Actually, no, I've lived in like 8 states. That's still pretty good. It's like 1/10 of about 1/10 of our beautiful union here. But my point being, why is the market not responding to these things? Like, this number should be 9.5. They won 11 games last year with Joe frickin' Flacco, and they've got their best running back, arguably the best running back in the league, back on the field.
But so
this number is telling you that Watson is iffy at best.
But I'd also make the argument that every team in this division has a brutal schedule because of the rest of the division, because they're all so physical.
We can go through each one, and maybe tomorrow we can do the rest of the North, because I want to analyze it. But I'd be willing to bet in terms of the travel. Like, again, let's lay this out for you. They're at New Orleans. I know that's an easy game, but they're in New Orleans. And then they have to go back home and then turn around and play Pittsburgh on a Thursday night. Then you have to go to Denver the following week after that crazy travel situation. Then you're back at Pittsburgh, back-to-back road games after a short week of rest. Then you play your Super Bowl at home against the Chiefs. Then you're back on the road for a short week at Cincinnati. Then another primetime game at home, which means you get 6 hours less prep for your Week 18 game at Baltimore. That final seven-week stretch is brutal situationally.
Unless you're facing Jared Stidham, Justin Fields, Mahomes, and then Jake Browning because Burrow can't stay on the field.
I can't push back to that because I don't know who's going to be starting a quarterback in those games. I'm just laying out the situations as we stand. I think we have a guest coming up next. I can't look at
Todd
the rundown.
Furman.
Todd Furman. Oh, I love you, Todd. Can't wait to talk to you on the other side, Sharp Money.